A friend of mine not too long ago, at the beginning of this meme coin explosion, came to me with stars in his eyes. He was taken by this idea of community action, that essentially meme coins can be seen as financial incentives to do, well, anything. In most cases, it's to simply hop on the rocket ship and go for a ride. There's nothing wrong with that. But why can't meme coins reward more than just gambling? Why can't they reward brand loyalty, community service, or, and this is the underpinning of today's episode, artistry? Meme coins are basically super liquid stocks that capture epochs of communal attention. You may laugh them off as signs of crypto culture's stubborn immaturity, but I think there are fascinating incentive structures baked into this cake that have yet to really be teased out. I was looking for some folks to talk to who were in the process of doing just that, which is how I came to our guests today, Anubis 3100 and Sirsu, two of the founders of the Crash 747 meme coin. I will note up front, this is no endorsement of their coin, but rather a peek under the hood of a meme coin project that is interested both in the methods of pump and dumpery, but also in this aforementioned idea of incentivized artistry. Anubis is a longtime friend and came on the podcast last year, actually, to educate me on Pepe Coin, so he's been at the shitcoining thing for a while. Not to mention, his art is also super referential to internet culture, which is basically the distilled heart of meme coins themselves. Sirsu, meanwhile, is the co-founder of, among other things, the culture and lifestyle brand Blackhand, so when it comes to identifying and understanding cultural movements, he's a really valuable resource. Our conversation today is about the cultural and communal possibilities of meme coins, the methods of imbuing artistry into them as both concept and call to action, and much more. My general rule of thumb is that anytime a podcast goes a full hour, it's because we were having too much fun to stop beforehand. So, I hope you enjoy this extremely fun, slightly long, extremely bonkers episode of the Mocha Live podcast. Good evening, everybody. It's 5.02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in beautiful, cloudy, rainy Brooklyn, New York. We have officially broken our, I think, three-week-long streak of starting exactly on time, but hopefully you'll forgive us because we got quite a show for you today. My name is Max Cohen. I will be one of your hosts for the Mocha Live podcast. Thanks for joining us. And who do we have joining us today? Well, as always, it's Mr. Colborne Bell, my co-host and founder of the Museum of Crypto Art. How are you, Colborne? Excellent. And our guest today, the inimitable, invincible Anubis 3100 and Sirsu, artists, founders, and most pertinently for this conversation, founders of Crash 737, a meme coin that has taken the meme coin world by storm.
Yeah, I'm doing good. We also have one other founder. He is ATM. He just unfortunately couldn't make it here, but I just wanted to put that out. Just we're not just only two founders, we're three.
Right. ATM is here with us in spirit. And we can feel his presence perhaps even now with us. So we have not spoken really about this meme coin thing on Mocha Live at all in the past few months, even though they have, I think I'm comfortable saying, been kind of the broadest and most like financially impactful and intention grabbing aspect of the larger crypto market for, I don't know, quite a while now. But it's a tricky conversation, and I know this, and I think everyone listening knows this, because it's so clearly in so many different instances, very kind of profiteering, scheming, influencer-led pump and dumps, and that part of it isn't really very interesting to me on its face. But I think that there are important changes in this kind of meme coin ecosystem that differentiates it from what came before, and that's really what I want to talk about today. A couple of things that I want to use to kind of like set our conversation, right? And the reasons why I think this is different. Well, first is the dog whiff hat picture, which is the icon for whiff, a profoundly high-priced meme coin on Solana. And the picture of the dog in question sold for $4.3 million. And I think that's important because it implies cultural value beyond the asset itself, right? And we saw this with Bohm as well, where the creation of the meme coin led to the artist responsible, Dark Farms One, getting a ton more attention on their work, and the creation of then honorific work about them by artists, you know, even like Beeple, was making things that were kind of homages to this artist. So that means, and this is the important point, is that meme coin influence and attention can now distill itself into individuals and provide massive cultural value. You know, I think Xcopy and Neon Glitch 86's Mutatio, being minted over a million times, is another emblem of that, which is essentially a meme coin merged with an NFT. So anyways, that was a really long preamble, but it brings me, Anubis and Sersu, to you two, because while we are not endorsing your meme coin, 747 Crash, I think there are aspects of it that are really exciting and really important, because I think they play into this idea of what does it mean when these meme coins kind of break out of what they are as a financial asset and kind of gain cultural value. So let's just start off here. Anubis, perhaps you can start us off. Why do you think we, as a larger crypto movement, keep coming back to meme coins?
It's because we're in a casino, you know? It's like, I had the weird pleasure of going to a casino for the first time in person, and it was a completely godless place, but on the other place, it was a complete visual fest of just colors, sounds, drinks. I was sort of shocked by the amount of old people that were in physical casinos in comparison to like how we function here. But it just seemed like, oh, this is just a place where you can like go and have fun. And it just seems it's no different than the space. It's like we're gravitating towards the shiny, glowing sort of, ooh, raw slot machine went up to $15,000, you know, just like throw in like 100, like a, what, 10, 20 cents. And then that's exactly what we're doing when we're shitcoining, right? We're just throwing in like one soul, 0.1 soul, hoping it goes to like 10 soul, to 100 soul. Same thing. It just, I guess the only difference is the money is not as controlled, where you have to go to the casino's ATM to exchange your money for like a ticket to play. You can just like straight up take your money out, you know?
Sersu, anything to add on top of that? You know, I know that you also, you know, you founded, or helped at least to found, Black Hand.
Yeah, no, like it's, I think it's like, I'm just trying to adjust my mic here so people can hear me more. But I think it's one of those things where, yeah, it's the casino aspect, but also like meme coins are whimsical. You know what I mean? Like there's like this aspect of, I don't have to think about a thing. I can be a part of a thing. Right. And like when we're looking at like how the world wants to make sense of stuff, there's just certain things that don't make sense, and it's okay that it doesn't make sense. And meme coins is one of those things, right? Like the aspect that you can take an identifier, a marker, a phrase, and then attach it with financial value, which then gives it wings or legs to do other things on top of it, is like a really unique primitive of kind of like a community building, right? Like, not to like intellectualize this any further than I think it needs to be, but like when we think about like communities, like our housing communities, like for example, I lived in Harlem for about 7 years, right? And I knew everyone there. And there were just certain things about like that community, that space, that like we had our own lingo, our own language. And that was something that we could codify and then provide extra value on top of. And so the stuff that we all did, we helped people like grow within their native environment, but also helped enrich the community as a whole. And so I think like memification in a way is like a path of creating like this boundless opportunity where creativity can coexist with like this, I guess, financial inflow. And it's really kind of like how those two worlds kind of coexist that will determine whether or not like it actually manifests into something greater than itself or it collapses. So it's a very like unique and interesting, like, I guess like space to be in. Cause I think it's like endemic of a lot of other different things that we're like sort of native to, but just not as hyper accelerated.
Also, to like add on top of that, the really interesting thing, I realized this with the Slurf and not Bohm, but Bowden, and like when all the sort of political memes started to come through, where it's like a good, aside from like newer tech will always attract the younger generations, we are the generation that grew up with memes. We grew up scrolling 9GAG in school because math class was too boring. And for the longest time, our parents were like, you're not going to make money off of that. But it seems like meme coins is like the financial, like the full financialization of memes that like people have just been looking for. Because before that, it was just YouTube videos and like MLG edits back in the day with Black Ops 2. And that essentially forged like half of YouTube's commentary scene now. But it's like become the stepping stone. And it's such an important thing. And it seems like culture, because of our experience with 9gag, movies, just even if you go back, like you have satirical caricature in newspaper, like you look at caricature from the French Revolution, people like to make fun of certain things, and that gives us certain value. And so this just feels like the next step, where it's like we've had 20 years of just Tyler Durden memes, you know, like Pepe just growing in the background for over literally 10 years, Doge, the same thing. That it just like it seemed like inevitable that like somebody's gonna be like, this is gonna be worth money. Like it holds enough like mind share in culture that it needs to be worth something. And we just happened to be in this in the casino where it was like, you can bet on it. Let's go.
I actually disagree with the casino analogy here, because I think what's developing is something I think it's developing in a way that is less and less analogous to the casino structure. Because the idea of the casino is that they're all the same, right? I found myself a bit surprised when I went to Vegas for the first time and found the same games, the same, you know, actual architectural composition, the same disgusting carpeting, the same, you know, clothes on the servers as I did in Atlantic City, as I did in, you know, lower key, what I thought were like, would be just less kind of grand scale casinos in like the Bahamas, you know, when I was much younger. There is a de-individuation of the casino there. Right. So you might have like facades that differentiate them. But if you took the insides of six casinos in Las Vegas and you ask somebody to, you know, you strip away all the architecture, they're impossible to tell apart. The difference in meme coins is that to succeed in this game, it seems like the goal is actually to create something, a differentiated product, right? It is to forge a version of the casino that is more understandable than, you know, a slot machine, because you feel that you can kind of gauge cultural capital as it's spreading, as it's getting into, you know, certain hands that might make the price go up. So there is this betting aspect, but it seems to be based much more in the various paths to individuality, as opposed to everything else in the gambling world, which wants to take those things away. Does that make sense? And that's why I think this like meaning making, right, of creating memes, enlisting a community to have a personal investment in what is essentially a table game, is kind of a new paradigm.
I can see that. I can actually see that. That makes sense. Yeah, for sure.
I see it as well. I view it as sort of like a hybridization of both, right? Because like we still, everything is sort of standardized in the method of buying into the meme coins and in what you look for in the validity of meme coins, right? Where it's like, are the memes fire? Is the community building? Have they updated their deck screener? You know, have they burnt LP? So it's like it's standardized in the sense of like the slot machine will always function the same way. It's just more of now, do you add like three more rolls on top of it to give you like more chances, or do you add more colors? You know what I mean? But on the other side, that's where culture comes in, because that's also what makes like the best sort of casinos. Like that's what makes Vegas Vegas. Like it's still a casino. They're all the same. But if you go outside of America, growing up in Egypt, Vegas is like this place where you go to make a lot of money and have fun with friends. You know, like the phrase, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And so it's just like, it is still culturally impactful in that sense, right? And so it's just like, it's a mixture of both with, to your point, less of the arm of the house, or maybe not less of the arm of the house because the devs are still in control. And if somebody holds more than 5% of a meme coin, they can just nuke the price. But it's more of like that power has been sort of, within quotation marks, decentralized, where it's like you have somewhat a chance of getting like the same buying power, you know, or like your odds of winning are not as skewed depending on like how you play the game, aside from just like the house will always win, you know, or like the slot machine having to hit a certain limit before then it starts to pay out its big games, you know.
Colborn, I remember, I think it was almost exactly a year ago, actually, when we talked about Pepe on this podcast, and Anubis, you were actually on with us for that episode. That was the first time I had ever seen a meme coin kind of come into prominence. Had that happened, had like this kind of wave of wild enthusiasm for a token, that wasn't Bitcoin or Ethereum or like another chain. Had you seen that happen before Pepe, or I guess suppose Doge is the like?
It was Doge, man. Yeah, it was Doge. Doge was crazy.
We had Doge. We also had SHIB. SHIB. I guess so. The 21 run was insane.
Yeah, there's been meme coins. I mean, if you go back, you think to the start of NFTs as well. There was that company Roll that was kind of tokenizing all the artists.
Yeah, the social tokens is what they were branding it at the time. Right. Yeah, Roll, right. Rally, then Roll got hacked crazy.
Yeah.
That was a nutty time.
That's when Whale Shark, that community dumped. That's what people were moving into. So there was always the idea that, you know, everything we're trying to push everything as liquid as possible into the smallest unit that allows some participatory economics. And, you know, NFTs just due to scale have been larger vessels for this kind of participatory capture, but meme coins is right under it. And then when you start to think of perhaps like full stack where these things are going, this is just like fluid value transfer. And yeah, I don't think it has to make sense. I agree with that.
It's been freeing. It's like, there's a lot of debate about it in the art spaces, and it's like, it's funny because that debate always happens with the newer circles of artists that just join the space, not the ones that have spent time. Because those who have spent time here, by the end of it, it's part of the game. You know, it's like we function in this highly financialized space, and it's like you can complain about it for so long and just not do anything. And me and Sirsa were talking about this, where it's like, some people are like complaining about, oh, artists launching and meme coins and shit coins. It's like, what do you want us to do? Like, go wash dishes for like 40 hours a week and then go home tired? And it's like, if that's the case, we can do that. But then on the other side, artists will immediately get hit with like, well, you're not working hard enough. Where's your output? You know, like I need an artist that's present tweeting GM every day, you know? And so it's like, it's to Colburn's point, it's already heading that way. So it's just like, it's just been fun. It's like, once you embrace it, it just, you're in for the ride. You know, it's like the casino. It's like you just go grab a mojito or something from the bar and go bet on blackjack. You know, if you're new, you don't enter the high end, like the high roller stable, you know?
Right. I think the other thing too to consider is like Power Dada is like one of the oldest groups and the NFT community in space. They pretty much had done a ton of research papers and also were part of the initial cohort that even brought in royalties for NFT platforms. Like they did a study kind of like impermanent loss as it relates to artists in engaging in the NFT space as a whole. And they basically like said, there's three tracks. You can be a pure artist. And by being a pure artist, you are most likely to make less money than everyone else. There's the artist trader who is in the middle, right? You're able to, you may not be able to maximize your artistic output, but you may be able to maximize your potential financial, gain, allowing you to do two things. Continue to fund your art by yourself and also buy other people's art. And then you have the collector, which is at the top of the list, because as a collector, you're able to maximize off of the buying and trading of other people's arts, especially if you know how to, either cultivate or speculate on a particular community. And so like this stuff has been out for about 5-6 years now already. And if we were already seeing the trajectory on how artists are going to make fun or are going to survive in this space, then it always was predicated upon being able to play both roles, like the dual role of artist and trader. Unless you are an artist that already has a support group that can patronize and support yourself like indefinitely, for example, right? Like I have a friend of mine who just now like has someone who will literally bankroll their entire artistic project for the rest of the year, right? Like, but that's not something that every artist is going to be privy to. So the opportunity in, I guess, like, let's say creating work within a meme or a shitcoin space, like helps create artistic output, right? It creates a on-chain footprint that people can look forward and say, hey, like the reason why Beeple got big is because he had done everydays for 15 years. Took him 15 years before he blew up and got $69 million, right? Like you think about like XCopy, for example, was giving away all his art in 2018 for free or for a dollar, right? Like what's the one that got bought by eBay? I forgot what it's called.
Known Origin.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and plenty of other platforms that no longer exist.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So then when he started blowing up on Super Rare, like 2020, 2021, it made sense as to why, like, all of a sudden his work was worth 10 ETH, 100 ETH, whatever the case is, right? So there's like this, there's this correlation between output and presence, no matter where it is as an artist, I think, in this space, that gives people the confidence and the means of strongly speculating that your work will be worth something later that people can play up on. And if memes are a way in which folks can participate and create larger amounts of output that then equal like their work being valued later, like, then that's something that I think is valuable for artists to consider. And I think the other thing too is, like, if you're participating in something, whether you're buying it, training it, or whatever the case is, we already know what artists tend to do. Artists who have money buy other artists' work. Mm-hmm. Like, that is something that is like a continued train that has happened all throughout existence. Like, there are obviously your collectors who will buy art for the sake of art and have another way to make money, but then artists who make money buy other artists' work because they want to see their friends win. That is just that's just something ingrained in every artist's brain, mine included. So it's a very interesting, like, inflection point where you have a vanguard of folks that were here 2018, or vanguard that were here when Color Coins was out, 13, 14, 15, right? Like, very OG, I think, true, like, crypto art artists. Then you had the second wave of folks that were coming in 17, 18, 19, when, like, Super Rare were starting to cook up. And Power Data was doing all their research articles, and then royalties became a thing. And then you had the newer class, which, where I come from, that's like 2020, 2021, right? Like, very much like pandemic focused and related artists. And then now you have the tail end of that, which is like folks 2022 and later. And so, like, we've seen like this recursion, I think, that Anubis was talking about, where, like, I know, like, when we got in 2020 and such, we were complaining about shit. And then by the time 22 hit, when it was like, things got real rough, it was like, oh shit. Like, this is a make it or break it type of situation where, like, it's no longer the bull market. What you do now, like, helps, I guess, translate into what's going to happen later. And when we think, mm-hmm. when I think about the previous gen of like the X copies and stuff, ETH wasn't worth much. And his worth was being sold for $1. Like, all that was still, that was also a bear market coming from the ICO crash of 2017. So, like, we're seeing history rhyme in so many different ways, right? And so, like, I think it's in recognizing that as an artist, like, the opportunity and embracing the, I guess, the primitive sense of self as it relates to meme coins and other shit coins and the tokenomics aspect of things starts to make a lot more sense and brings a lot more color.
I just want to add in there, like, at the end of the day, this was kind of the thesis for NFTs to begin with, is that we wanted to put our arms around creative talent and bring them into the crypto sphere and say, like, here are the developers, here are the financiers, how do we actually make this shit usable? So, like, let's get the people that are on the end of the risk spectrum, that are going to be non-technical, that are going to make it cool, that are going to make UI simple, UX interesting. And how do we, like, lay into what is a very technical, complex thing for a select group of people? And how do we push that down? And how do we, like, get people excited? And so this is kind of, you know, maybe it's manifesting itself in these coins, but this is what we wanted. We want people 100%. Playing. We want people experimenting. It's exciting.
And you can't also, like, you can't blame an artist when we function in a space when you throw one soul, depending on the right timing, you can walk away with so much money that you set for 1-2 years. You know, it's like, it's literally there. It's just, it's there. It's like, it's part of the game. The best way to, like, go about it is to show people how to correctly do this, to play this game, rather than to be like, oh, to, like, to take the high road and be like, I will not do that. Because, like, even in the form of, like, struggle, and I'm a person, like, I read Berserk recently, and, like, I have now, like, idealized the idea of struggle, but, like, out of all things, financial struggle is not the one that we should use as artists to build our character, you know? It should be adversity of, like, I didn't know how to paint, you know, people rejected my work and now they liked it. Not, I'm working paycheck to paycheck, I need to make money. that's not the struggle that really sort of allows you to like fully grow in your career either. It's just the struggle that will hinder it, because you're forced to think short term, not even long term. You want the struggle of like, oh, this sculpture is not feasible. I fucked up the size. I need to go back and rework this. Like now, it's due in 3 weeks, and the bronze cast is messed up. Right? You don't want the struggle of like, oh, I have a bronze cast idea. Got to go slave for 2 years to actually cast the thing. Mm-hmm. You know,
I had come across a tweet from the photographer Joel LB some weeks or months ago, and it stuck with me because essentially what Joel was saying was some version of like, if I had just farmed Blast, I think Blast was in vogue at the time. If I had just farmed Blast on this Twitter account, I would have enough money to just do my art for years. But I was too.
It was Jito. I think it was the Jito.
Was it Jito?
I think
either way, Joel was like, I'm too afraid of the public sentiment leaving my side and being seen as like, looking for profiteering, alienating people who are just here for the art, that I didn't do it and I passed up on, potentially insane financial freedom. And there is, I think both all three of you have hit on this in your comments, there is this kind of undercurrent of artistic purity within the space that bubbles up whenever there is PFP projects that go wild or meme coins that go wild or anything that doesn't categorize itself as capital A art and doesn't look like capital A art, even if it might be benefiting artists down the road, which I think is at odds with something we're always saying, which is like, we need to protect and incentivize the people who don't have the collector support, who don't have the ingrained networks of support. You know, Sirsu, you mentioned something that I thought was really interesting, which is, you invoke Dada, right? And you invoke these early artists. They had communities kind of built in, right? The Dada artists all know each other. They were all supporting each other. These early artists from Super Rare, they all knew each other. They were all supporting each other. There weren't that many. They were all recognizable to each other. This was something that fascinated me about making it 24/7 when I kind of first came upon them. And Anubis was learning through you a lot of like what they were doing, that you would have these artists who were lesser known. They were creating these drops with artists who could sell for a lot more, had a lot more institutional support. And that kind of ingrained both financial, artistic, and also psychologically strengthening community were all baked into the thing. But how do you do that now when a lot of these communities seem closed and when everyone kind of seems to be going it alone? And this is where I want to return to the Crash 747 thing, because 747. Because memification allows you to build that network.
Yep.
Right. You're able to engage. You know, I've been seeing people like Dutchy, people like Latasha, people like Catalog from the music NFT side. They're engaging with these memes that you've created, and they're probably having personalized access is the wrong word, but personalized communication. Personal communication with artists who they might otherwise not have, just because they are now moving towards the joint creation of this meme or the joint continuation of a meme which you've created. And that to me is really interesting, because I think a lot of people don't see the community building implications of meme coins, just as I think they didn't see that with PFP projects.
Right. Like, what's so cool is, in doing Crash, I've been able to work with people I've been wanting to work with for years. And every time I wanted to work with a lot of these folks, like, the projects just didn't seem to like really resonate on either side, like in a way where I was like, this makes sense. Yeah, let's just do it type thing. And this, from like the moment Anubis and ATM and I launched this at like 4:22 in the morning, 2 Mondays ago, right? Yep. Like, it has turned into like this tidal wave effect where like every stretch folks have been like, damn, this is fresh. Like, I want to do something with this. I'm inspired to do something with this. And I think we have a lot of things going for it, right? Like, one is travel is a very innocuous thing. The idea of moving from place to place is a resonant thing that I think all of us can identify with, right? The opportunity or the idea, the idealized like way of going from point A to B. I think the second thing is like the vintage aesthetic. Like, it pulls upon like the right node of nostalgia where it's not like stifling, but it invites enough because it's already so far away from us. Like, 1960, mm-hmm. right, is like 60 years away, or 60 years behind us. So there's like this really nice groove where 60s, 70s, 80s, like our generation, like we know of these things. We're not of these things. Those were our parents, our grandparents, what have you. So there's like this way that we can kind of take, we can spin on it in a way that that's very fun and fresh because we're not, we didn't live in it. So we don't have like that connection to it in that sense, which is the reason why, like when we initially started this, we thought about kind of like time period and where like, if we had done something closer to now, it's too sensitive, not necessarily in like a political way, but too sensitive in the fact that like, it wouldn't catch on because we already have so many mixed feelings about what's currently happening with travel, whether it's through COVID, whether it's through like the egregiousness of like TSA and like just the fact that flying is restrictive, or like the idea of like, you know, Boeing being like falling apart. Everywhere you know, there's an article of like something wrong with a Boeing flight, with a plane manufactured by Boeing, or the fact that like Boeing, Raytheon Tech, Lockheed Martin, all of these like not only like actively have funded war efforts, but actively fund the Gaza-Palestinian conflict, for example, right? Like, so there's so many things related to the now that like this would not work. But taking something where it's just as ridiculous, but 60 years in the past enables us to kind of create a surrealist effect related to this whole travel aspect that it invites people to say, this is an interesting magical world I could be a part of. And like, yeah, Boeing is a manufacturer in real life. What if they ran an airline? What would that look like? And how could you like make a satirical parody poking fun at them? And yet at the same time, inviting and creating something new and special. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a dream to have worked on it.
The question is, right, like you have this artistic ideology behind this meme coin, which I think already sets it unique amongst meme coins, right, and just intention. But there's also this other side, which is it's a meme coin. It's probably destined for a pump and dump. It's going to have a moment in the spotlight and then probably experience permanent abandonment. And that's not anything to do with your project or any given project. It's just the nature of these things and how they build attention, find attention, then lose attention. Right.
Right.
Which means that on its face, unless people are going to do research into every single, you know, meme coin project, then everything's going to suffer the same fate, which is it's going to be a pump and dump, like have the aesthetics of a pump and dump first. And then anything artistic or conceptual is going to be like an underpinning below that, that will probably end up being kind of sapped from the thing in the future. We saw that happen with Boehm just a couple of weeks ago, where I think the initial idea was that it was this kind of like art celebration, but then it just got picked up by everyone. And then it completely lost that side of the thing. It was just another coin, which I think is just how our attention, our cultural attention flows at this point. Do you think, and Colbert, maybe you can answer this being, you know, kind of just a little bit separate from like the creation of a meme coin, but like, do you think that there's a way that any of these can have longer lasting cultural value and attain like personal investment disconnected from where the price is at? Or, you know, we've invoked Meltem de Mirrors a lot on this podcast where like narrative follows price, not the way around, other way around. Do you think there's any way to break that paradigm here, even with like conceptualization, artistry, et cetera?
I would say in my like almost 30 years on the internet that everything is again kind of rhyming in that it's like dogs and cats and like monkeys. And if it's not the NFTs, then it's the meme coins, then it's the GIFs. You know, people like pandas. People are like, you know, if you want it to go big, it's got to be pretty simple. So the nuance of art is where we're playing. We talked about this on Sunday, Max. You have like two competing things. You have capital A art on top, and you have this desire for it to be for more people, for it to be accessible, for culture to be ownable and distributed. And, you know, it's really hard to go like high concept for everybody. It's just hard to bridge that, and you know, and we'll keep trying.
It's also like you have to understand the tools that you use. Like, and you also have to understand, like to your point, like how these things work, right? Where it's if you are sort of making a coin, like a meme coin, and in your head you're gonna be like, I will make this last 10 years. It's like that probability is you need to work harder than the dude working on Cardano right now. And apparently he works so hard. He has not stopped, you know?
Charles? Shout out Charles. You
know? Dude, he's just out here meditating, writing code, you know, manifesting. But it's just like, we understand, yeah, meme coins don't have the same lifespan as like other coins, like something like Solana or ETH. But also, and the other thing, there are examples of meme coins sustaining themselves for 1 year, 2 years. And like, that's enough for the art side to actually be explored and like just enough, you know. It's like we explore it for the 2 years that this coin runs for, and when it's done, it's done. And it's also like to the whole idea of like, you got to know what the tools is. Like, we know meme coins, people love tickers and people love cool names and they love good memes, right? And it's like, we know meme coins crash. So that's why we chose 7Boeing 7, and that's why we chose the ticker being crash, right? Because it's like, it's self-referential. We know it's going to crash. That's the whole joke. It's like, we're going to fly it up and then we're going to crash it together as the community. Because it's like the same thing as like, you sell your gay on Solana, you know, like the community just held that because of the internal joke. And then when somebody sold, the joke got broken, sell-off happens. And now the joke is running again. You know, it's just, it's one of those, like, if you know the joke, you can just play it till the end. And then it's like a joke is still funny. You don't have to keep it going. You know, like a comedy special is only an hour and a half long and then it's done. You know, you don't have to rewatch it three times in the same day. And so for us is like, you know, like there is no doubt that the core team and the people work on this will financially benefit, you know, and there's always a sort of, if we look at the distribution, like the founders, if done correctly, will always usually benefit more than people who buy in at any sort of given point. But at the end of the day, it's like we're exploring the art side. We're artists and we have ideas that we want to explore either in 747 or outside 747.
And also the founders are usually just like the last people out, you know? And I think it's probably, you know, would behoove us to put maybe some of this in parallel with, you know, the Mocha token, which we launched to like build utility. And I would imagine 747 Airlines probably has a larger market cap than the Mocha token.
We'd have to check.
Yeah.
But I think there's no way it doesn't.
But
I think ultimately, like, the unique thing about, I think, why this meme is really interesting and unique is like, I think it goes back to the fact that this is a meme that's about travel, also self-referential in relation to meme tokens itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it also means that there's opportunities where, like, not just even artistically, but even financially, there's a way in which things can break out. And I often look at, for example, like Pool.fm turning into Pool Suite and then turning into Vacation as like, you know, that sort of interesting means of meme maturation into a tangible community, into tangible product. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that like that's the full direction of where we're taking 747, but we've already been sort of like exposed to ideas in relation to like travel stipends or opportunities to connect what we're doing to hotel stays or like partnerships with suitcase brands, like just as a very like easy one-to-one kind of like colloquial, since we're already dealing with an airline, then the aspect of travel makes sense. We recently launched this thing called High Miles, which is like a loyalty program built on Stack that like helps kind of keep the joke running longer, like frequent flyer miles type of things, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's like this interesting idea where, because the meme is both like, well, the meme is surreal, nonsensical, but also like grounded in some sense of reality, there is an opportunity where like you can, in a way, make it, you can grow it outside of itself. So it doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. stay within like the meme token container. It actually can create something interesting. And like, I also look at like, for example, and I don't think this is us either. But I also look at like, you know, there are meme tokens and the, like some people have called them DAOs, but I think FWB is more akin to a meme than it is to a DAO. Where like that token was really just a social group of all of their friends. and then it turned into something bigger because everyone wanted to be a part of the Cool Kids Club. And then that has led to them hosting festivals for 3 years straight. Mm-hmm. So there's like these, there are like ways in which these kind of markers can turn into larger things. But I think that just takes like some vision. It takes like a real means of like execution and like, and conviction that it can, that you can manifest that. Otherwise, like if it is just kind of like the running container joke within kind of like the trading space and Telegram and memes and like shilling, then it'll always stay there. So I think
I want to stick, sorry, Anubis, really quickly. I want to stick on this point because I think there's a question that I really want to get to, which is involved with this, which is that your project is an example of this, but that artists who jump onto these meme coin bandwagons or by contributing memes or minting artworks that are referential, which we saw with both Bohm and the X-Copy Mutatio thing, they get attention from people who they don't usually get attention from. They might get sales out of that, which means that value, actual monetary value, can now transition out of the meme coin itself, out of the ticker itself, and into those who are giving longer legs to it. And this is a new paradigm for artists because it doesn't just reward being terminally online and speed, but it also rewards creativity,
right,
of interaction, right? And I am curious, Anubis, I know you were going to say something before, and I want to make sure you have an opportunity to say that, but like, how do you see this paradigm affecting artists? And am I off base in even kind of suggesting that in the first place?
Well, no, because actually this leads into the point I wanted to make, because like the other side of that, you know, we can talk about like the tokenomics, the loyalty points, all that. But the other side that people don't really talk about is visual language and understanding how visual language works within culture, how that's embedded and how that influences culture, right? I happen to be lucky enough to make some money off of Slurf, and I just bought a MacBook and an iPad. Thank you, Slurf. Thank you, Solana shitcoins. I don't know the founder of Solana. I would thank him. But essentially, like, I went to the Apple store. I haven't been in an Apple store in 8 years. Bought an Apple, went to a coffee shop, and instantly noticed the clear separation in aesthetics and just, like, how people will associate themselves within just societal culture, right, based on the computer they hold, right? And it just, like, so visual language is like extremely important. And my dad would be like, yo, Anubis, look everywhere. Art is literally embedded in everything. It is embedded in the cups you drink from. It is embedded in the covers you look at on a book. It's embedded in the tire design of the bus that is dirty and is covered with mud. You don't see it. That does not mean that you're like, because your eye does not notice it, that does not mean it's there. And the best example of that is like every documentary about like, a space company or a shoe company or a film company, the coolest parts are always, here are the early sketches of our, here are the early sketches of this like Nike shoe. And everybody's like, oh, wow, this is amazing. This is what led to this formation of this look within culture, right? And so for us, even like any artist that sort of dips their toes in this is forced to like go through the like, I need to explore what visual language means if this is going to need to be successful. And it just teaches you things that you can then just take out and put into back into your own work, right? Where it's like this, like our sort of thing with Crash, right? It's like we use like 1960s and 1970s imagery and images, but the language and the sort of logo design, you know, Amir Sirsu cooked with that one. That logo is responsible for literally everything, and like that also speaks to visual language. It's like all you need is one thing, and it can sort of like get the ball moving, where it's like the logo he created was just the perfect early or like late 90s aesthetic logo that goes viral on Twitter every time for our generation, because we grew up with Motorola phones, with BlackBerry phones, the early PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 ads. And those literally go viral every fucking week. Some Twitter will just like post them, will like them, I'll save them to my computer, you know. Like the clear PlayStation, the clear boxes where you can see the circuits inside. So it's like, we essentially were like, oh, like this just hits on like everything, and also allows us as artists to explore how to utilize nostalgia, how to use visual language. And we get to sprinkle on top like corporate, you know, graphic design. And my favorite thing, I call it Y2K corpo speak, right? Which is like that you're always meant to be here, you know, like it's like it's just that sort of language, while not and that sort of like knowledge, while might not appear important at first, right? If you look at all the artists in history, a lot of artists that have had that sort of background in their careers benefited from it way more than just somebody who's like, I'm going to stick to the art, you know? And so it just like, it opens up your toolbox. You now understand, have a better understanding of language, composition in relation to language, logo, and just vibes and imagery, you know, and how that sort of plays off into each other.
Well, dankness, as Art Gnome would probably call it.
Dankness, you know?
100%.
Just it's like you have to look at where things are going, right? Where it's like the internet has been going towards like early 2000s, like early 90s PS1, PS2 graphics, because we missed that. You know, the world is literally on the brink of World War III if you look at it too much, you know. It's like we don't want to look at that too hard. You never know. If we look at the article too much, it causes the war. Oh, so it's like we're just going to the things that gave a sense of comfort, which is to me is like PlayStation, video games, sitting next to my cousin. He's running up Matrix. I'm asking, can I hit the right key button, please? Can I play, you know? And that sort of, if you go to our website, like when you hit the song, it's like vaporwave. And like we all grew up, I mean, I personally love vaporwave, and it's such an internet codified aesthetic already that it just also, it just helps bring everything together, you know? And artistically, I have learned so much in the last 2 weeks. It's been insane. I was like making an aesthetics PowerPoint just because I was like, these are cool aesthetics.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think about. I'm going to answer this. I think there's already an answer to this question before I even ask it, so maybe it's more rhetorical, but it's like, of course, there's nothing new under the sun. Can we ever create anything new, right? Like Shiba. I'm just thinking about like these meme coins especially, right? Pepe is a reference to Pepe, which was a meme that, you know, circulated when I was in middle school, right? Shiba is a play on Doge, and Dog with Hat is a play on Shiba, and it's dogs and it's cats and these things that are very familiar. And like, you know, this your Crash project is a reference to all these other things. Goldman got a package.
Let's go.
What is that?
But like, nothing is ever new, and nothing also exists in a vacuum. You know, I think sometimes we take a bit of shit on the podcast and the newsletter for focusing too much on like financial stuff and not like on hard artistry. But my retort to that is always like, these two things can't exist without each other. And like, they're all commentaries on each other. Mm-hmm. And like, they merge in these places, and you can choose to see one side of it or the other. And perhaps we need to in circumstances of art so that we can survive and not get completely like beaten down by, you know, pessimism.
Right.
But that paradigm works on the other side too. And that these financial things also sometimes, and even perhaps unintentionally, have some artistry in them that is worthy of like discussion and worthy of like bringing out. Let's just end on one more question. Maybe we could just like roundtable this a bit. Is there a future way of separating meme coins from gambling, in the sense that you're not investing money into the meme coin necessarily, but that there are other ways of attaining the coin outside of sheer monetary conversion? And the reason I bring that up is because Vitalik Buterin, the Ethereum founder, had this article, the name I cannot remember, but it was basically about like different uses for meme coins, right? Can they exist in other ecosystems? Can they have different, can they challenge different paradigms and exist in different paradigms than just memes, finances, visual language?
I think we're already starting to see ways in which folks can earn tokens by participation, right? Like, for example, with our project, I mentioned the high miles thing earlier. It's like a series of quests where, like, if you are, let's say, we have a very vibrant Warpcast channel. If you followed our Warpcast channel last Wednesday, you were eligible to receive like an airdrop of the token. Like, because again, we just wanted to encourage people to just be a part of the community and send each other airplane photos or airplane emojis, like, for, you know, an indefinite amount of time, right? But like, but I think there are ways in which, like, through the simple means of like sharing and proliferating the meme, you know, like there are, if we look at tokens and the earning of tokens or the acquisition of tokens from like a non-financial perspective, then that's really baked within sort of like loyalty, right? Like when you, if you're a part of a community and you help contribute to the, I guess, the richness of that community, then you get rewarded. It's like folks who are like community gardens is a really good, I guess, like analog here, where like if you are part of water, making sure like they're adequately watered, making sure that like things need to be repotted, for example, you know, bringing newer or interesting like plants to the local ecology that help it, you know, grow better, or like, you know, create like a plug in the holes of like if a community garden has tomatoes but we need like microgreens and no one's had microgreens but you bring microgreens, for example, then like you're adding to the overall richness of that community. And I think those things equate to or like in the tokenomic perspective can equate to you receiving like this sort of financial layer, i.e. the token itself, for that contribution. And I think we could start to like, as people, I think it takes a little bit of creativity to figure out like how you till the garden. But once you kind of have like that opportunity of like, A, what your garden is, and then what needs to be in it, and then how people can like continue to use and then replenish it, then you have like, I would say like the steps to then say, hey, like here are ways in which you can, I guess, like earn, not buy. So I think that that's kind of like the answer there. And like, I mean, we've seen examples of this, but I think it takes more folks of finding out what these things are to kind of have a much more like enriching experience around it. But yeah, questing and stuff like that has been around for a minute.
Yeah. Also, I was talking to Lonely, the curator at Verse, because we were just like talking about Farcaster and Degen, just because it essentially was just an insane sort of, it was like equivalent to the ENS drop that happened to everybody. And ENS was the sort of perfect airdrop to happen that just shut every artist that was complaining about airdrops, meme coins, and money, because it just like put the spoon of food in their mouth when they were hungry and they were just refusing to eat because they felt like something was going to get taken from them. And that's natural because you're shitcoin, right? But the airdrop was just like, here, eat. And that immediately just broke a little bit of boundaries, because then you could, like, you can still complain about it, but now you have money to actually afford your rent and stuff. So now you can sit down and work and realize the freedom of it. And so with Degen and what Lonely was saying is like, dude, I have the ability. And now, yeah, this is somewhat, of course, predicated on the price of the token itself. But as of the current price of Degen, right, he has the ability to tip people, I think, like close to $2,000, $3,000 a day that they'll receive in the end of the month in like immediately tradable token. Now, if the price is down, the price is down. If the price is up, the price is up. But it's like, he was just saying, he's like, well, dude, now I don't, like, if I can't buy an artist's work, I have this like tip allocation of a meme coin that I can just give it to them, because I, the way it's built is telling me to give it away. I don't benefit from holding it anyway. And that not only brings them like from like the meme coin thing, is like, yeah, we get more users, more funding, yada, yada, yada. It also just like, he's the curator. He can't buy everything he sees he likes. He can just tip people and they get to gain a little bit. And now they're sort of suffering, their financial suffering, if they are suffering, is a little bit eased and they can work on their output, right? Or like better their life, right? It's like the sort of, like money's like oil, right? Where it's like a great lubricant. You have a finger, you have a ring stuck on it, you put a little bit of oil or Vaseline, that stuff is out. That doesn't mean that the problem is fixed forever. You still gotta figure out why that shit's getting stuck. Maybe you gotta like go to the gym or something. I don't know, you have big knuckles, arthritis, you know? It's just like, one of those, it's like, it's just a great lubricant to allow you to see like, oh, okay, this is not that big of an issue. What are the issues that are actually causing this thing? You know, what is causing the ring to be stuck?
The only thing I'll add is that I think we've proven that tokens are great short-term incentivizers and direct a tremendous amount of consumer behavior and discussion. But the problem with that is that great things, important things, are rarely built in the short term. And I get worried around what is a distraction to where value could or should be accruing and flowing. And I do find it interesting how everybody kind of gets their moment in the sun and then it rolls. Maybe it comes back. Most of the time it doesn't. I think humans, just by our nature, are incredibly fallible. And I think once this system gets introduced to the AI is where we start to see really more of these kind of perhaps community garden effects, where there is like concentration on a singular space by something that is designed to hold that space and concentrate on that space. Because as it is now, I think at the end of the day, what happened with OpenSea was effectively a tragedy of the commons, in which everybody rushed in, everybody tried to utilize the space, and you know, we're left with kind of the disastrous after effects. Their storage costs spike. They don't know what their traffic is. It's impossible to model these things. But if we have predictable actors acting in predictable ways, governing and working to improve spaces, then you know, that rationality goes a long way.
Pattern is slowly starting to form. You know, it's like history is rhyming, so it's a little bit iterative, I guess, every time. We're just going to a little bit change next time.
Yeah, and I did want to say, because I was always super like anti-Solana, was never going to play in there. It was meme coins that brought me in, and the experience of what it was like in 2017 to 2020 to now is like night and day frictionless. So we are progressing and it is getting smooth, and it is a lot of starts and stops and ups and downs, but it's getting better. And it's getting to that point where it is almost like consumer ready, frictionless, all back-ended. And that is actually kind of like exciting and encouraging to see.
Gentlemen, we, I think, absolutely accomplished what I set out to do here today, which is have a really intelligent, wide-ranging conversation about something that I just don't think people are taking seriously as like a piece of cultural value. So thank you very much, all three of you, for having this conversation with me about meme coins. I think it was really, really helpful for me, and also hopefully helpful for the people listening. Anubis and Sirso, I do want to give you a moment to kind of just, you know, if you want to shill, if you want to just tell the people how to find you, what you got going on, to just take a moment and
read the contract address one by one.
All right. Thank you guys for having us. It really means a lot. We are huge fans of Mocha. I'm also a little bit biased because I also did work with Mocha. So I'm essentially a fan of the team I work for. But thank you guys. Mocha is always, and like the Mocha podcast and Mocha has always looked at as like a really a great voice for sort of some form of critical discussion that's happening in the space. And when it comes to sort of us, we're sort of running it at we're airport.gay. That's our website. If you're curious about like why .gay, it's because the cold ones laugh right there. It's just, it's so dumb that it's just like, why gay? Because yeah, it was that or .crash, and crash cost $800, and we did not have the market cap to support such a purchase.
I didn't even know they had that domain ending.
Yeah, we were like, whoa, we need to get that.
Would have been the first.
I didn't even know.
We have a Zora collection that essentially you can, if you're an artist that would like to sort of help us contribute to the LP, our Zora collection is built where you can submit work. If it's accepted, you get whitelisted to the collection. You can mint your work, and all the funds from there just go directly to the LP. We don't get any, and it's a little bit weird. Like the artists themselves don't get any, but we're also working on a different collection. We're theorizing of what to do, where it's like either, as this stuff gains more steam, we might start to like split it in half or just spin up a whole new collection just to start to get, to put money in people into like money in direct. My English is breaking down. Excuse me. Money in people's hands directly. There we go. And then aside from that, we're just busy chugging, making good memes, good graphic design. Shout out Cider and his art piece. I love graphic design. It's a vocat. People know that. But it just, we're just going to be working, doing some stuff. I don't know if Sirso wants to give any like hints or.
Sure. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, so like one thing, like Zora just released an ability to pay an artwork in Crash. And so as our main collection provides LP for Crash, then the posit is that like we have positive token growth and liquidity, which then means people can now use that token to then buy work and support all the artists that are making work for us. And with this, so nice little flywheel there. But I think the other thing is we have a high miles loyalty program. By completing different quests, you can find them on Daylight or you can find them on Zerion Wallet. By completing those, you earn points every week. And then at the end of the month, you are eligible to claim a portion of Crash that we allocate on a monthly basis. The opportunity here is that through high miles loyalty points, you will get real cool IRL opportunities and activations. Some things that we're already starting to do for NFT NYC. We do have a Corpo hat piece of merch that we just dropped. Dijon Hours. You can find that on our Warpcast channel because we're using a Warpcast frame to purchase. Shout out to Warp Shop. But honestly, I mean, I think at the end of the day, like we have three main goals: get to Boeing market cap, crash their shit, and enjoy our flight. Like at the end of the day, that's really it, right?
Pretty much.
So if you're a fan of 747 Air, we'd be happy to have you. I'm your captain. Anubis and ATM are my co-pilots, and we're here to never land.
Stay yeah. And you get free Quaaludes.
We do have that.
To any complimentary on the house, every stratosphere we hit, you just get more and more.
Pretty much.
Until you're just yeeted out of your mind.
Pretty much. We found the original recipe, so yeah.
Yep.
Well, thank you guys very much.
Yeah,
I know that if I let you two continue to talk, we will never get out of here. So I'm capping it right now.
It's true.
I just wanted to say that we flew past 747 views.
Love that.
There we go. It is written. It is known.
We should have. I mean, again, and if I let you two keep talking, we'd fly past 747 minutes. So. thank you very much. This has been the Mocha Live podcast. Thank you, Anubis. Thank you, Sirsu. Thank you, Colborn. If you enjoyed the podcast you heard today, you can collect every episode on Zora.co. You can give us a 5-star rating, review, follow, or subscribe on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Substack at museumofcrypto.substack.com. I'm Max, from me, from Colborn, from Anubis, from Sirsu. We appreciate you all being with us, and we'll see you real soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much for listening. This podcast was edited and produced by me, Max Cohen. Big thanks to my trusty co-host, as always, Mr. Colborn Bell, and thanks as well to Anubis3100 and Sirsu for being wonderful guests on the episode today. Thanks to Julian Brangold for composing our intro music and to DayFox for composing our cold open theme. But as always, the biggest thanks goes out to you for listening. Thank you so much for being here with us for this episode of the Mocha Live podcast, and we hope to have you back for the next one. We'll see you soon.